this is September from September Morning, and you are listening to today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio. And right now I have the pleasure of speaking on the phone with Grant from the band In the Company of Serpents. And we're in the middle of an air raid, you're saying?
Yeah. So every Wednesday at 11 here in Denver, they test the air raid sirens. And even though you kind of know it's happening on a routine schedule, it's still a bit perturbing given the broader cultural moment.
I can imagine. So how have you guys been keeping busy during this whole COVID-19 and or keeping your sanity out there?
My wife and I have been marathoning all manner of different movies, having like different like genre themed movie nights and things like that, trying to stay active with my creative pursuits, pick up a guitar when I think about it, and try not to go too bug wild, stir crazy,
Yeah, I gotcha. And would you say your thoughts are on how, you're out there in Colorado, how have they been handling everything?
It's kind of interesting. Like, I live in central Denver, and there's kind of like this divide between the people who are taking this hyper seriously and those who are being a bit more cavalier. We're masking up and doing all the precautions and whatnot when we get out of the house. But, you cross paths with a ton of people that are perhaps being a bit more flippant with things. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have a good answer for you. How's it over there in Cleveland?
I was going to say it's like the same. We've been pretty divided, seems like, even before this thing, but it's just something else that has everybody, we should be coming, the saying is we're all in this together, but no, we can't seem to get on the same page for anything these days.
my wife had a comment that I felt was prescient about that sort of notion, we're all in this together. It's like, yeah, maybe, but like we're all in the same storm. We're not necessarily in the same boat, it's rough and it's different for everybody,
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of being out there in Denver, a lot of weird shit comes out of Denver area. Just in Colorado in general, I'm one of those conspiracy theory guys, and wonder what shall we discuss here first? The Denver airport, the theories behind that.
I don't know, man. Let me don my tinfoil hat before we get too deep into it. I don't know. Like, Colorado's a pretty magical place, and there's definitely some high strangeness here.
Oh, yeah. I remember reading a little bit about the Cherokee Ranch and the Kimball Castle out there. Are you familiar with that?
No, but I'm passingly familiar with some of this shit. Like, I've read like the Skinwalker Ranch book, and have a handful of Jacques Vallée books on my shelf. So I'm adjacent, I would say, to these topics.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys. When I was still in the military and traveled, I made it out to Denver a couple times. But then I was just, everybody will go to. They have their list of places they have to go visit or whatever. And I'm like, what's the most underground, like, crazy conspiracy theory type stuff I can go to and visit, you know? And so I mean,
there's hotbeds of different UFO sightings and things like that in our backyard. And you know, like there's like tons of like Sasquatch and Bigfoot sorts of lore here. In fact, if you want a fun little stop, if you go up Highway 285, there's a little town called Bailey that has in the back of a outdoor gear outfitter store, they have the Sasquatch Museum, which is quite a kick. Sounds like it might be up your alley.
Yeah, yeah. Now, what was the name of the town again?
Bailey. So it's like maybe, I don't know, 45 minutes to an hour outside of Denver.
How do you spell that?
B-A-I-L-E-Y, I believe.
Wow.
You
want to talk about, like, you know, talk about the stars lining up. I mean, that's my last name. So
so obviously you need to make a pilgrimage.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, this is kind of a little bit, it seems like a little bit up the alley of your band, though. I mean, the reading I was doing with this latest album and the inspiration behind it, you know, I mean, there's like synchronicities and it seems very magical.
Oh, yeah.
And, so let's, you know, let's talk a little bit about that. What inspired, you know, well, first of all, like what inspired the name of In the Company of Serpents?
So that one's kind of like, that goes back to just obviously at the founding of the band. Cause of course, like, you know, you got to start someplace with a name. But I had originally come up with our cross insignia, which is a, dual bar cross, frequently known as the Cross of Lorraine or Laura. Over the lower bar, we've gotten Ouroboros kind of configured in that sort of infinity loop sort of symbol. And so there's a ton of symbolic meaning nested in that. And I had kind of come up with that glyph before we even knew what we were going to call each other or call ourselves as a band, rather, because it started as a two-piece. JJ Anselmi, the founding drummer that I initiated this band with, came up with the name In the Company of Serpents kind of after I came up with this glyph that I thought was, you know, I wanted something kind of striking from an aesthetic perspective. And I'm very much interested in symbolic language. So I had kind of come up with that, and he came up with the name In the Company of Serpents and suggested it. And I was like, well, that sticks. Cool. We're going with that.
Great. Yeah. I was going to ask you too, cause I saw that originally you guys were a two piece. How was it like writing and playing as a two piece?
It was a lot of fun, you know, and there wasn't like really like any like rhyme or reason as to why like we were a two piece initially. It was just like JJ and I met when both of our other bands, our previous bands, played a show together, and I kind of was sound checking to some riffs by the Seattle band Earth. And he like immediately recognized him, and you know, not like nobody else in the room recognized him because we were both in basically country tinged bands at the time. And we struck up a friendship and started talking about how we'd really love to be playing some heavy cathartic music. And you know, the ball just sort of got rolling that way. And it wasn't as though it was like a calculated decision not to find a bass player before we started playing out. We just started getting opportunities and shows. We're like, well, we got songs, let's book them, you know? And just kind of snowballed from there. And, you know, ultimately I came to a point in, And I guess my growth as a songwriter, where I was like, well, you know, we could be doing a lot more if we had another pair of hands here to help execute some of this stuff that might otherwise only be relegated to the studio. So it of course eventually evolved into the three piece it is now.
Yeah, and then how was that transition for you guys?
It was cool. Ben, the bass player, and he plays lap steel guitar as well on pretty much every song we've since written. He's an exceptional multi-instrumentalist, and like I've been buddies with him for a long time, and was looking for an excuse to jam with him anyway. So it was fairly organic, and it seems like it fits well. And yeah, it's been a fun evolution.
Now, what let's bring some things to light, so to speak, and talk about the new album, Lux.
Okay. Bring it to light.
Yeah, you like that? I wrote that down specifically to you, so show I was doing my homework.
Yeah, no, I dig it.
Now, is this, and then I prove my ignorance by asking this question, but I mean, what number album is this for you guys?
Oh gosh, like this is the hilarious part, is I'm gonna have to sit here and count it out on my fingers, but I think this is our sixth release overall, which kabbalistically I think is significant for the title that we're working with, as six would be the number that gets associated with the sphere of Tiferet, the solar center of the Tree of Life, and obviously we're playing with themes of light in this album Lux, so I think it's prescient.
And was that on purpose, or that kind of you just
happy accident?
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that until like we basically had been done recording it, and I was going through the process of getting everything sent off to the pressing plants. And you know, like when you get a new record press, they're like, okay, well, you want to give this thing a serial number? Not just kind of like for all of our previous stuff, I'd always just done the initials of the band and then like the number of the release. So it kind of struck me as, like I said, prescient when I figured out, I was like, oh, shoot, like here's this record, Lux. It deals with light as a, sort of fundamental root essence. And of course, it happens to land perfectly with the Kabbalistic symbolism that we've been playing with previously.
See, there's those synchronicities again, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now,
synchronicity is always like, it's one of those things that's like, it's almost always meaningless to like anybody except for the person experiencing them. But then the person experiencing it, of course, it's deeply profound for them. So what might be a little like funny sync for me is probably like, you know, somebody might bat their eye at and be like, what?
Well, I've learned the older I've gotten and on this journey called life, that there's like really no coincidences anymore. You know, it seems like there's meaning or a reason behind everything.
Oh, certainly. And like, you know, that's one of the fun things about engaging with it, is like the more you lean into it, the more you start to notice this type of stuff. And yeah, synchronicity is certainly a strange mistress. I think I would wager you're probably familiar with Robert Anton Wilson's work.
No.
he's an author. Sounds like he'd be up your alley, but that was like one of the first authors that I remember reading that like kind of opened my eyes to the weird wild world that you might broadly plant synchronicity within. But he had a pretty infamous book in the 70s called Cosmic Trigger, about his own experiences with kind of going down the very strange road of the Western esoteric tradition, and all of the high strangeness that followed. But it's a fun read.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. Definitely up my alley. Yeah, I mean, I've kind of been the older, I mean, I don't know, you know, it's just the older I get, the farther along I get on this like spiritual journey, it seems like, you know, I'm open to more and I go down these rabbit holes. So this definitely sounds like something I'm going to want to check out.
Yeah, he's a good one. He kind of famously, like one of the books he's most known for is this book that he wrote called the Illuminatus Trilogy that, he started writing in the late 60s when he was an editor at Playboy. And he was the guy that would like edit all of the letters to the editor. And so he'd get all of these, like all manner of like crazy, conspiracy theory stuff sent in to the offices of Playboy. And so he and his writing partner, Robert Shea, decided to write this book based upon the premise that every single conspiracy you've ever heard is true. And it's quite a funny and zany read, but sounds like it might tickle your fancy.
Yeah, it sounds like an odd place to write these, send these letters to Playboy, you know.
But yeah, yeah,
that totally. In itself, you know, kind of like cracks
a different time.
So I wanted to ask too, the reason why I originally asked for, you know, what album number this is, like, when did you guys, what number did you guys transition from the two piece to the three piece?
So this will mark our first release as a three piece. So I'm definitely excited to hear what people think about it. And, you know, part of my MO, writing as a two piece for so long was to just try and just fatten up our sound as much as possible and make it sound as though, you know, we were, more than just two people. And, so like I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to amplifiers. And so the way that often manifested was me just creating a wall of amps behind myself and using different modulation effects to, you know, drop the signal of my guitar down an octave and send it through a bass amp and, just try and fatten that sound up. So now that we actually have somebody like expressly covering that low end, it frees up, a lot of writing choices for me and like different nuances that I can begin to play with a bit more. So it's been cool. And, yeah, I'm excited to see what people think about it, you know?
So, and then this one's not, the release is what, scheduled for the fall or something?
I think. No. It's coming out. It's actually the official release date is this coming Friday.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So,
and like, you know, we were supposed to have a record release show this coming Saturday, but clearly, you know, the broader plight winds prevailed and that's not happening.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you guys had like a tour scheduled and stuff that had to get canceled and all that.
You know, it's still kind of up in the air. Like we weren't planning to do a national tour until the fall, but it's still anybody's guess as to when live music will be a thing again. You know, I know a lot of like my friends and my buddies who are in bands are definitely feeling the hurt of this broader situation because, you know, like most of us are pursuing this because it's a passion of ours. And there's a certain level of, you know, catharsis that one gains from playing live music. And, you know, for the foreseeable future, that may not be a thing. So it's, you know, it's definitely felt.
Yeah, I'm like also like a wrestling fan too, you know, and it's been like, you know, trying to watch the shows without fans in the audience. It's like, wow,
surreal,
I didn't realize. Yeah, it's like I didn't realize how bad the acting was all these years because the fans add so much to it. And it's just like, you know, the relationship, the ebb and flow, the give and take or whatever between the audience and the performer. It's just
those
magic there.
Like, they're consummate showmen, you know, and like you play off the audience, like like for something like wrestling, and like it's a completely different ballgame.
And even, I mean, I would say even for musicians too, it's like that you guys get fed from the fan response a lot. I would.
Yeah, you know, like we had originally we started working with this this video artist who goes by the moniker Moth Powder Light Show, and he's worked with a bunch of other musicians doing like live visuals for different bands. Like I think he was ostensibly supposed to be on tour right now with Uncle Acid and the Deadbeats, but like, you know, obviously pretty much every tour is canceled. So, but we had commissioned him to come up with these little vignettes that were symbolically related to the themes of each of the songs on the new record. And our whole big plan was we're going to, you know, debut this sort of live show where we would have these visuals projected against us that are thematically significant to what we're doing for each song. But like, you know, there's no live performance to be had. And like, we considered maybe trying to like still see if the venue would let us come in and, you know, play a show to an audience of none.
Yeah. Like stream it or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Just something. But like, even that one wasn't going to be a real opportunity. So, you know, we're definitely looking forward to when the dust settles from this broader COVID situation and when we can get back out to playing. But at the same time, you know, we don't want to be Typhoid Marys, like cavalierly going out there and putting a ton of people in a room when it might not be safe to do so. And, you know, that's really my concern. Like, when the reason why I'm wearing a mask when I go outside is like, I don't know if I'm a carrier or not, you know, like, and it would be devastating for me to learn that if I was a carrier that was, you know, asymptomatic, I'd accidentally spread it to somebody, you know, like, so yeah, it ain't going to be a thing for a minute, but, once the dust settles, I certainly will relish being able to get back to live performance.
Yeah, I agree. And it seems like, you know, I mean, speaking of being carriers, it's like The Walking Dead. I'm kind of leaning totally towards like we're all infected, you know. And
I will say that I've like with all the movie marathons we've been doing, I've definitely been putting some mileage on my George Romero films.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead. It's like, oh, cool. These are forecasting a broader environment. Cool.
Yeah. Or speaking of George Romero, The Crazies. You know, there's one for you.
Oh, I've never actually seen that one.
Oh, add that to the list. To. Yeah,
I'm of course familiar with all of his zombie stuff, but.
Along the theme that the theme of our current climate, I would say definitely check
the zeitgeist.
That one out. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right on. I'll give it a look, man. You know, the other one that comes to mind if we're talking horror is like that scene in John Carpenter's remake of The Thing, where Kurt Russell is just like sitting there with a bottle of scotch. He's like, nobody trusts anyone, and we're all very tired.
Yeah, that's probably one of my favorite remakes ever.
Yeah. You know, I've never actually seen the original Thing from Another World from the 50s, but, like, maybe that's another one I'll cross off the list along with The Crazies.
Yeah, or like, and then going back to John Carpenter, I mean, They Live, you know?
Oh, God, yeah, classic. Dude, and, well, speaking wrestling, Rowdy Piper in that one.
Yeah, yep.
Total classic. Yeah,
one of my favorites. So what now? I needed you to kind of explain to our virtual audience here about let me see if I'm pronouncing this right, the Prima Materia.
Yeah. So that's kind of that is one of the foundational ideas of this record, and it's basically what I was playing with there is that like throughout the ages, different sort of esoteric scholars and wizards and all manner of weird folk have tried to define like a fundamental root essence behind the nature of being. Or try and distill down being into just this some sort of fundamental source. And oftentimes the analogies that get employed and the ones that I'm playing with a lot on this record are the notion of all is light, all is mind, and all is sound. These are sort of analogies that that you know various Hermeticists and Kabbalists and other esoteric types have employed, and those are kind of the ones that I'm playing with here. This notion that light is sort of this like fundamental nature of being. So on one level, this record is kind of a form of esoteric prayer. You might say that like if all is light, then that's, you know, we're describing God or divinity there, like the essence of being itself. And so that's like kind of the abstract perspective that I'm playing with on this record. But then much more personally, my daughter's name is, its etymology has lux at the heart of it too. So on the one level, it's sort of like this form of prayer to the all. And on another, it's kind of a message of love to my child.
That's great. Now, yeah, I read that. A lot of inspiration from, now is she your first?
Yeah, she is, yeah.
Okay, so a lot of inspiration for her for this album.
Yeah, like that's been a huge facet of this. And, you know, that's kind of the idea that I came in with as a broader sort of like framework for this album. But one of the kind of fun and often bizarre and jarring facets of this, you know, if we're talking like synchronistic types of things and, you know, high strangeness, as I've mentioned a few times, is that there's certain facets of this record that have been revealed to me that, like, you know, what I thought I was writing about was really something quite else entirely. And it's almost like this notion of like a retrocausative effect where like a certain future state was culling certain things into being without my awareness of it. And, you know, I thought I was writing about one thing when, you know, come down the line a little bit, I've come to find, is, you know, it's about something else entirely. And themes of, you know, light and life were definitely what I thought I was, you know, from the outside writing about. But if you talk about it from an esoteric perspective, any treatment of, you know, solar cycles, is there's always a dawn and there's a dusk. And so I've come to find that there are also some themes of death that I wasn't aware of when I was writing this record, that have come to play, you know, personally and metaphorically as well. We lost my spouse's father basically at the culmination of like finishing the recording of this record, like almost down to the hour. And wow, you know, it's been heavy.
Sorry for your loss.
Yeah, you know, it's so it goes. Thank you. But yeah, it's really been this has been a magical record for me.
And how old's your daughter?
Personally, she's two.
Oh, okay, because I was going to say, is like, and, you know, when you started creating, was she being born? And, you know, how they say that one life begins, another ends, type cycle.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, like, I started writing this record about, like, like even before she was born, but like I was, you know, and like my wife was pregnant, and you know, I knew I'd be having a kid soon, and like that's when I really started ruminating on these ideas. And you know, it's like she's, you know, we've been watching our child grow like throughout this whole process, and you know, it's really been inspiring. But like, you know, back to what I was kind of alluding to previously, is like, you know, sometimes you write something or you create a piece of art that, you know, you're looking at from a certain perspective, and you might not glean that there are other facets to it, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I feel like I might be rambling a touch.
No. I feel you, man. I mean, I was just thinking too with, I mean, I'm a father of two daughters, and how much, you know, it, you know, it's like a transition, a life change to become, am I going to be able to be the man that this child, this life I'm bringing in, you know, and my
it's a big responsibility.
Yeah. And my firstborn, her name's Bianca. And I remember telling, you know,
beautiful
I was at the,
name.
Thank you. And I was at, the barber, shop getting my hair cut and, you know, expecting her or what. And, you know, I remember telling the barber, the old Italian guy, like, yeah, well, oh, what's her name? Oh, Bianca. And he's just like, oh, that means white, you know? And I'm like, oh, okay. And you realize that. And then, you know, you're talking about light, white light, you
yeah.
know, there's a synchronicity right there, you know, but.
Totally.
That's yeah, where my mind was, my mind was running. I'm like the interconnect.
Yeah, man. I feel that. That's, you know, it's funny. Those like names can pack a lot in them, you know, and, you know, that's, I think that's an interesting observation and one that like, you know, so we previously, you know, employed a lot of Kabbalistic symbolism in our work. And, as soon as you mentioned that like white light, I'm just like, I'm standing in my office looking at a tree of life, like looking at Keter, the first Sephiroth. Of the tree of life that is basically the embodiment of that. So yeah, snakes are fun.
Dude, this ain't your average interview. For all the listeners out there, you're on this journey with us. This is an experience right now.
yeah.
My second daughter's name, I remember, you know, looking online, you know, when I knew I was having another girl and just like trying to find a name. And I settled with Celestial, which is like heavenly.
And, oh, that's another cool name.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of interconnectedness right now with this conversation.
You want to know what's funny is as soon as you mentioned that, guess what? I'm looking at a book on my shelf that I recently picked up. I've not yet read it, so I can't, you know, comment as to its contents. But guess what it's called?
Oh, boy.
The Celestial Art. Essays on Astrological Magic.
See? I mean, we'll have to thank, you know, Earsplit for setting this up.
Yeah, totally.
This interview was meant to happen here. And it's funny because I'm looking at my next question, and I think it's playing a role right now, but what role does magic play in this album?
Oh, it's... you know, it's part of my own spiritual journey, and it's been something that's been fairly transformative for me. I think, you know, when you start talking about like things like magic, first of all, people are going to look at you kind of like side-eyed and, you know, wonder if you're a Looney Tune, of some kind. But what often gets lost in the mix is that, a lot of these practices are about radical and profound self-transformation and self-actualization and kind of a striving towards a realization of one's utmost potential. And so for me, it's kind of like this alchemical journey of my own spiritual process and trying to I guess galvanize myself into something better than the base material that one begins with. So that's something that of course, you know, finds its way into my writing and has been really, frankly, kind of a recurrent theme in all of our work, kind of from the jump. And I should couch that with saying that, you know, I don't profess to be some adept or some high mystic or, you know, shamanistic guru or anything like that. This is all just, you know, about my own personal journey and attempts at self-transformation.
I mean, you just talking about that, once again, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, wow, look, there's so many
more things.
Yeah. I you know, retired military, I served overseas, came back, you know, dealing with, you know, PTSD and recovery. I mean, you know, recovered addict and stuff like that. And one of my regular meetings that I attend is a men's recovery group, and it's called Galvanized. and then also just why I was doing this recovery, I've always been more of a, like, you know, I'm not big pharmaceutical, like throw pills at me. That's just like a band-aid to try and fix what the problem is. It's like there's a deeper wound, there's a deeper level, let's go through it. And I've always been on, you know, open to such things, and like you said, the evolution that we you know, to try and become who we're intended to be. And I the last time before everything got shut down, there was a person that I was seeing along this journey of healing that, you know, like spiritually, there's been so much that's been opened up to me. And I'm still like, you know, like the esoteric and numerology and Kabbalistic stuff that you're mentioning is still like stuff that has interested me, but I'm still trying to get to that level to wrap my head around it. But I was told that where I'm at, that I was getting ascending, you know, and like,
yeah,
it's just like, it's just, you know, here we are, you know, having this conversation. I was just going to interview a guy in a band and talk about his album.
I'll spare you yet another sink, but guess what? Another book I'm looking at is called
Ascension or something, right?
Ascension Magic.
Oh, man. Yeah, I tell you what, this is, I can't wait till this airs. We'll have to make sure everybody, like, you know, washes up and cleanses before they sit down to go to listen to this interview, put the headphones on or whatever.
Do a little proper banishing ritual, you know, like just get a don the correct robes and just go for it.
Exactly. Oh, man. So, we talked about this, you know, the putting it, working this album. What's like the creative process been like for you?
You know, I typically, from a writing perspective, I'll find the riffs first and kind of like write things that I find compelling. First and foremost, like I think, you know, before I'm a lyricist, I'm a guitarist, you know? And so I kind of, that's my springboard that I will kind of begin with. But then, you know, like in talking about all of these, you know, strange topics that we've been covering here, like these are the sorts of things that I find compelling and, you know, it's occupying most of my bookshelf, as you might have surmised. And so those sort of themes end up working themselves into the music. But like I kind of mentioned or alluded to earlier, is that there's sometimes a really cool facet of the creative process that I've experienced that's that sort of retrocausative phenomenon, where it's like something is calling you to write it, whether or not you know it. Like, it's like the notion that people don't have ideas have people. You know, so that's been a really like fun and interesting and, you know, illuminating thing to kind of come to grips with, that can be both, you know, profoundly inspiring and also like mildly terrifying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But hope that made some semblance of sense.
No, yeah, totally. I mean, I was just thinking too, like, I'm just, you know, I didn't know too much about your band or your music. Like you guys trying to just do something to stay sane during this time. So I reach out to the, you know, my connections and the labels and all that stuff. Hey, give me, who do you got that I can do an interview for the podcast with and everything, come up with your guy, you know, they send me your guy's information. I start reading up, kind of becoming familiar, but then it's like, you know, it was like basically like, man, this could go one of two ways. You know, I've never talked with you before. And this, look how it just created into what it is. I mean, this is a great interview, you know? So
yeah, I'm enjoying the conversation.
Yeah. So it was just, like you said, ideas have people, and you know, this interview kind of just became, you know, we're just the two talking heads, I guess, in it, but it seems it has taken a life of its own, which is really cool.
Well, and I appreciate it, man. You know, I'm glad you reached out. This is a fun conversation, and you know, like in our relative isolation of this broader cultural moment, it can be quite refreshing to get to have a conversation about some of these stranger facets of our existence. So
yes, for sure.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask also, and this is like, you know, usually it's like asking somebody like, okay, who's your favorite kid, you know, out of the whole family. But with this new album, is there one song in particular that you'd say is your favorite, that you really want this message to be heard?
You know, it kind of like changes day by day. I think probably right now, if I'm like forced to choose, I would say the team, The Chasm at the Mouth of the All. And maybe it's just because of what we've been talking about, but like that one definitely, I think is pretty resonant with me at the moment. Emotionally and spiritually and otherwise. It kind of marks a departure for us, or a change of pace, so to speak. That's definitely like one of the more I guess when I was younger, I would, in retrospect, I can say that I sometimes fell into the trap of just trying to write the heaviest stuff possible at all times, and not giving a lot of breathing room to other approaches to music, and just, you know, trying to make the gnarliest, heaviest sludge record at all times. But that song is one that is, you know, comparatively quite mellow compared to a lot of the stuff that we've written, with maybe the exception of a song off of our previous record, Ein Sof Ahr, called Crucible, which was like pretty much the only other time that we've like had a song that's predominantly quote unquote clean tones, from a guitar perspective. But yeah, that I'd say right now, that's probably my favorite, The Chasm at the Mouth of the All. And that's one that, you know, kind of, there's all kinds of, different symbolic meaning that I've tried to nestle in that thing. I'd say, push comes to shove, that's my answer for right now, is The Chasm at the Mouth of the Ale.
Okay, great. Now, speaking of this like esoteric journey and everything, like when, did you begin yours, or when did it find you? Can you remember?
Totally. Like, it was probably for me around, like maybe 2008, 2009, that I started to, kind of dip my toes into the weirder waters of the various, bookstores, And yeah, I mentioned Robert Anton Wilson earlier, but he's probably like the springboard for me. Was like one of the first authors that I remember reading that like was directly engaging with this stuff. At the same time, it's totally an undercurrent of music that I've been inspired by. And for example, the whole chaos magic current is one that I only became familiar with by virtue of my interest in certain noise bands of the 70s and 80s, like Throbbing Gristle, Psychic TV, Coil, etc. And so I had kind of like brushed up against some of these ideas via that. And then, you know, like any good angsty edgelord teenager, at one point somebody, I got a copy of LaVey and the Satanic Bible and all that shit. And,
okay.
Pardon my language. I'm sorry, I forgot that this is radio.
No problem. But, it's an adult show.
Well, I wouldn't consider myself a LaVeyan Satanist at all, frankly. That was like one of the earliest things I remember reading, you know, like the Fisher Price Baby's First Occult Book, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's a strange sort of journey, you know, I'm captivated with the notion that there's this whole hidden facet to, existence and being that, is, like completely like at odds with the exoteric or mundane version of the story that we get, you know, like, and you know, like many folks, you know, I grew up in a fairly religious household, going to fairly exoteric Christian churches as a kid, and I just remember being like most of these ideas don't wash with the actual text. Like what you're espousing does not like match the biblical Christ in your core text.
You're not walking, you're talking this talk, but you're not walking it, right?
Yeah. Like it's like how do you not perceive that this is that like what you're espousing is like fundamentally at odds with the core teachings of your central Messiah. so I think like that sort of that seed got kind of planted a bit young in my disillusionment with the exoteric currents of Christianity. Now say what you will about the other side of it, like Gnostic Christianity and you know, going to like the Nag Hammadi scriptures and things like that, that espouse a far more personal and direct connection with divinity. I think there's a bit more there. I'm kind of rambling, and I find these ideas compelling, and the idea that you know, the broad story we've been handed down is somewhat fallacious and not the entire picture is, definitely been an undercurrent for me.
Yeah, and it's something else that I really connect to with what you're just saying. I mean, I was raised Catholic. I was an altar boy, all that good stuff, you know, or whatever. But I always, you know, the same thing. My mindset was always like looking at, you know, okay, this, you know, the hypocrisy in a lot of the people that were supposed to be, you know, being an example.
Yeah.
But I know when I started my journey in recovery, you know, working with AA and stuff like that, you know, it ended up being like a stumbling block, my upbringing and the religious aspects of, you know, my relationship with my higher power, you know, which is a big part of, you know, recovery. I'm thinking of, you know, what I was taught and what was put in my brain and it just always ended up when I finally got to the point where it was just like, it's my personal connection a relationship with my higher power, with God. It's not everybody else's, and this is what worked for them, and they're telling me this is, you know. It finally got to the point where it was just like I had to just rid myself of everybody else's views and make it personal.
I feel that, man.
Yeah, and that's when I experienced my greatest, like, healing, and, you know, like I said, I got 11 years now, so it seems to be working, you know?
You know, there's something fundamental to that term gnosis, you know? Like, that direct experiential, facet of spirituality is uniquely personal, and it's going to be different for everybody. And, you know, there's a lot of maps to the territory, but the map is not the territory. And, you know, what works for one may not work for another. And, you know, I don't mean to be derisive of, you know, exoteric Christianity. It works quite well for some of my loved ones, you know, the path to spirituality is uniquely personal, and it's everybody's got their own journey, man.
Yeah, agree. All right, so I'm gonna start asking you some of the questions I normally ask my guests
when
I have on here.
Now we can get back off from the tinfoil hat territory, or
well, I mean, wherever it's meant to go, it's gonna go. So, you know,
I'm being facetious.
go for the ride, I guess. You know, I try. I realize, you know, whenever I try and control things, it usually blows up in my face. So this has been really cool.
What's the Hunter Thompson saying? Buy the ticket, take the ride.
Yeah, exactly. So your top three musical artists.
Oh, so difficult to say, and that might change on a day-to-day basis. Can I just give you what I've been listening to lately?
Yeah, that'll work.
I've been going down this sort of path of like revisiting tons of stuff that I found super inspiring when I was much younger, and like really just kind of opening up to a lot of different musical worlds. But I've been putting a lot of mileage on Lou Reed's Transformer, Bowie's Heroes, and Brian Eno's Here Come the Warm Jets. So very much that like early 70s cocaine ghost glam rock shit. So that's been playing a lot in our household lately, and I really do enjoy that stuff. And you know, Bowie I've found to be excellent medicine for turbulent times, and you know, all of his records, well, not, you know, pick and choose your favorites, but like especially that Berlin trilogy that he did with, you know, Lowe and Lodger and Heroes. Those I've found particularly resonant at the moment. I frankly haven't been listening to a ton of heavy music, just because I don't know, given the emotional fatigue of this whole COVID situation, I don't necessarily need to go to these dark places as often as I might have previously, you know?
Yeah,
almost feels like too much, you know? But an all-time favorite from that end of the spectrum, I'd say, would be Neurosis's Times of Grace, that I think, I don't think I'll ever be able to listen to that record without getting chills down my spine. It's a masterpiece. Another one from the heavy end of the spectrum that's relatively more recent would be Swan's Leaving Meaning. There are some doozies on that record in terms of just the broader esoteric currents we've been discussing. And ones that feel just hauntingly spooky in the broader environment that we find ourselves within. I think it's called like My Phantom Limb, but the final song on that 2-disc CD is like this just haunting tune with like all these chants going on and like kind of speaking over himself, Michael Jura. It's a spooky one, and definitely one that, you know, like it ain't something I'm spinning daily.
I have to check that out.
That's good, man.
So like speaking of, you know, the songs that you've like felt, is there a certain like song that you feel has inspired you in life, like whenever you're going through like a dark time or something that helps bring you, you know, up?
I guess that, you know, it depends on the situation, and sometimes this one can be a bit morose. And so I don't necessarily advocate it as like the tonic to cure whatever ails you, if you're, you know, in an emotionally volatile state. But I've always really loved Nick Cave's cover of Bob Dylan's "Death Is Not the End." It can be pretty haunting and powerful. So back to your question about like all time favorite music stuff, like. Definitely been putting a lot of mileage on Nick Cave records right now. In particular, if you want a fun one that's kind of tongue in cheek for, a pandemic world, is the acoustic version of his tune, City of Refuge, which like on the original recording is like this kind of like dour and morose song, but then for the acoustic version he's done in all major keys, and so it has this like tongue-in-cheek quality to it where he's like, you better run, you better run, you better run to the city of refuge, you better run, like are you familiar?
I've always been a fan. I think I got turned on to Nick Cave through Natural Born Killer soundtrack, whatever. But
oh man, that's a good soundtrack.
Yeah, that is.
Like, there's some, you know, that was my introduction to Leonard Cohen.
Yeah,
was that, but like they have multiple songs from his record, The Future, including Anthem, which is like, okay. Back to your question about what's a great song for some trying times. I can't think of anything better than Leonard Cohen's Anthem. And in particular, that refrain, there is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Hey, so you mentioned, as we were talking earlier about, some of the books that you had. What's the last book that you've read?
So I have the nasty habit of starting like 7-8 books at a time. My capacity to acquire books often outpaces my ability to finish them. But the last really good one that I read, was one called, it's by a guy named Ingo Swann, who was a pioneer of remote viewing. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but
yes.
arguably some of the most important magical tech of the last century. He was involved in Project Stargate and was basically this gifted psychic. But he wrote a book that is kind of a lost book that just got published in the last 2 years, called Psychic Literacy and the Coming Psychic Renaissance, where he goes into the history of soothsaying and prophecy, everything from, you know, the Oracle at Delphi through Nostradamus and Cagliostro, et cetera. And like, just gives all these examples of, what, you know, from a material science viewpoint, that's been the prevailing perspective for the last 300 years, it shouldn't exist, but nonetheless does. I'd recommend that one to both hardened skeptics and true believers alike. It's pretty approachable, well written, and just gives you the history of psychic phenomena in a pretty concise first half of the book, and then spends the second half of the book elaborating upon how one might cultivate these faculties in themselves.
I'm going to have to add that one to the list then.
It's a good one for sure, man. I like, I've when I finished it, and well, all throughout reading it, I've just kept on telling my wife, I'm like, yo, I can't wait for you to read this. Like, cause she's got more of a innate intuitive capacity than I'm gifted with. And, I'm like, I'm reading this book and I'm just like, oh, it's just describing you, Melissa.
So do you have like a regular morning ritual or routine?
Oh, you mean from like an esoteric perspective? Like,
no, just a basic, like, is there something?
Oh, like, I'm, yeah, I get up and make some coffee, put on a record, and I've been learning a lot about like herbal medicine lately. So part of my morning regimen includes taking a bunch of herbal tinctures and herbal supplements and teas and things of that nature. You know, you mentioned your skepticism about like the medical industry, and in another life, shall we say, in terms of my previous career, I'd worked in medical tech, and let me just agree that this hyper specialization and monetization of just specific effects instead of looking at a broader whole is anathema to actual healing.
Yeah, they're making customers, not you know, healing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know, not to don too much of a tinfoil hat than we already have. But, I make coffee and I take a bunch of herbal tinctures.
Well, I'm kind of new to that. I mean, I've been, you know, like I said, kind of wait, you know, on this journey for a little while, away from the big pharma and all that, and natural healing and the body's ability to heal and stuff. And I'm getting into like the herbal tinctures, and I recently had to go on to a plant-based diet. I had a minor heart attack at the, you know, beginning of last month. And
my goodness, I'm sorry.
Oh, thanks. But I mean, it was another one of those things where it's just like, good thing it happened when it did. And it was like, you know, the wake up call I needed, change, you know, my eating habits and that part of the lifestyle. But I've been on this, now I'm like reading, you know, this thing about hawthorn berries, and there's this tincture I'm getting ready to make using hawthorn berries and how it's good and healing for the heart. So,
not to go too niche here, but if you have elevated cholesterol levels, one, because I kind of went through, I didn't have a heart attack, but I, you know, got some blood work back a number of years ago before I went to a plant-based diet myself. And so red yeast rice extract, not to go too niche here, for like, I don't know how compelling this is for the audience, red yeast rice extract, in combination with CoQ10 enzyme, in my personal experience, I was able to over half my cholesterol levels in a matter of like 2 months.
Yeah, no, I've read up on those. I've been taking the CoQ10, but I'll have to get some of that red yeast.
Yeah, you can find supplements online and stuff for it.
I've been doing a lot of juicing, yeah, like beets and stuff like that too. And
yeah. Like, you know, and it's kind of fun to learn about all this stuff. Like, plant medicine's like kind of the backbone of pharmacology. Like there's like the pharmacy industry doesn't exist without the very long tradition of herbal medicine. You know.
Yep. Exactly.
So yeah.
So is there, three people you can name who've like inspired you or you can credit for making you the person you are today?
Oh, I mean, I think like most folks, you look to your formative experiences and note that like, your parents are pretty prominent in that. But like one interesting thing for me lately has been discovering that like, despite the sort of, ills of exoteric Christianity that I mentioned previously. Like, it's been interesting to find out that my dad has kind of had a similar spiritual journey to me, and like was getting into writers like Gert Jief and Rudolf Steiner and stuff, like unbeknownst to me, like through his own path. So I'd say that was pretty formative. I don't know. Honestly, like on another level too, yeah, like just talking about family, like my older sister is 11 years older than me. And I always thought she was just the coolest when I was a little kid, you know? And, so I remember like she went all the way to boarding school, and I would go like sneak into her abandoned bedroom and, go through her closet and find all of her cassette tapes. And that was, where I found AC/DC. So I remember stealing her cassette for, If You Want Blood, You've Got It, and Back in Black. And like at that time, you know, I was like 6-7 years old. That was the heaviest thing I'd ever heard. So she's on that list. And then, I don't know. Probably my wife, and you know, like been attached at the hip to her for the last decade. So I'd say those are the people that kind of have helped create the Grant that is on the phone with you right now.
Great. Favorite toy as a child and why?
Favorite what?
Toy.
Toy. Oh, tough. I was big into Ghostbusters as a little one. So I had a lot of like Ghostbusters stuff. And then, there were some great like Star Wars toys in the 90s too. So maybe one of those, but then the other one that just leapt to mind. And so I got to mention it is, the Jurassic Park Tyrannosaurus Rex, like, had like a motion sensor or something in its feet, so when you stomped it on the ground, it made the infamous like noise from like that scene in the original film where like you just see the ripples in the cup of water.
Yeah. Cool. So we talked a little bit earlier about wrestling and Rowdy Roddy Piper and stuff. Is there a favorite wrestler that you've had growing up?
I mean, okay, I will couch this by saying that I'm not a like dyed in the wool like super knowledgeable fan, but I do know some of the bigger names. And Predator was always one of my favorite movies growing up. So Minnesota's governor, of course, former governor,
Jesse the Mind.
Yeah. Jesse the Body. The sexual Tyrannosaurus.
Exactly.
Ain't
got time to bleed.
And then, yeah, totally. And then, I mean, like, frankly, like, most of my appreciation of wrestlers has been, like, from, like, adjacent cultural things like movies, you know, like Predator or They Live, which you mentioned earlier with Rowdy Roddy Piper, you know, like, that's where I know most of these dudes from, is, like, that stuff, because I never... Like when I was a kid, I didn't get super into wrestling. I had friends who were into it and stuff, and you know, I'd try and keep up with them, but like, you know, I wasn't like watching it religiously. So the dudes who would wind up in like other pop cultural touchstones for me, like Predator and They Live, you know.
Cool. So, any message that you have for our military members currently serving overseas?
Stay safe, and thank you for doing what you're doing. Stay safe.
Grant, it's been great, man. This definitely went a bunch of ways I wasn't expecting it to, and those are the best types of conversations. If people are unfamiliar with In the Company of Serpents, they wanted to pick up, hear your music, or order something to support the band, where would you send them?
So our Bandcamp page is our first and foremost storefront. It's just In the Company of Serpents doom.bandcamp.com. You can also follow us on social media, where we'll post most of this stuff. The sign on Instagram and Twitter is just at ITCOS Doom. So the initials of the band, Doom. And then if you find us on Facebook, it's just in the company of Serpents.
Okay, great. And one last favor before we get off here, if I could ask, do you mind cutting a promo ID for the radio show?
Sure.
So just like introduce yourself and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Okay, you're listening to Today's Boondoggle. Hold on. Let me make sure I write that down so I don't muss it up too bad. All right. Well, here, you know what? I can remember. You're listening to Today's Boondoggle. Let's do it.
All right.
I should just go, huh?
Yeah. Go ahead.
You're
man.
Already recording.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Grant from In the Company of Serpents, and you're listening to today's Boondoggle. Do you want me to do another one since I kind of guffed that?
Yeah. Do one more.
Hey, you're listening to Grant from In the Company of Serpents, and right now you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Awesome, man. Thank you. It's been great talking with you, man. Hopefully, when things go back to normal, you guys will hit the road and maybe end up out here in Cleveland, man, and we could actually continue these conversations.
Ostensibly, we were supposed to, like, the tour we were routing for this fall was going to be in East Coast, and, that's, on our way out there from Denver, so... I'm pretty sure it was a scheduled stop. However, with everything else that's going on, I have less than 50% confidence that the tour is actually going to happen.
All right, man. Well,
but nonetheless, this has been a fun conversation. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. And hopefully, someday we'll get to do it in person again.
Sounds good, man.
All right, man. You take care.
All right. You as well. Be safe.
All right, bye.
Cheers.
We live in a castle at the mouth of the hole. We'll be right back.
VFW Story, brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
One time we were driving down to Little Creek, Virginia, and I had that S10, and we left Breezewood, and I told him how to go, you know. So I fell asleep, and we're going down 66. Anyway, I wake up and I'm like, where the hell are we? He goes, I don't know, just driving, man. I'm like, shit, we're freaking like 12 miles from D.C. You were supposed to get off
at
17.
That's the second time I did that.
Yeah.
I did it in the van, too.
Like Dumb and Dumber.
I'm like, let's go see the Frizz.
It was fun.
Bud.
Cuervo.
On his van. He did a brake job on his van coming
oh,
back.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, he's rolling off the freeway all over the place. His brakes are all fucked up on his van. So we pulled off at an auto parts store and got him in the parking lot of there and following him. We went in, bought a 5-ton jack and everything else. Jacked up the fucking car, pulled his wheels off.
We did a whole
brake job on a whole
right
fucking
van
in the parking lot of an auto parts store. I still got that jack.
Where was this at?
In between Virginia and back here. We're going down the road.
One thing about ACV,
Virginia.
We can do it all.
I still got that jack.
And thank you for listening to another story time from the VFW Hall, brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
Thank you for tuning into this week's edition of Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated entertainment cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news, entertainment information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for tuning into the show here at Domain Cleveland.